Hare Krishna.
Hare.
Welcome. Today, I've entitled this talk, Life. Who, what, when, where, why, and how? Trying to cover all the questions in one address. Who? We'll start with who. Who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? What's my purpose? What's my destiny? Is this all a big accident? Is life an exercise in futility? Meaninglessness? Nihilism? Emptiness? Is it a big cosmic joke? If that were the case, then you may as well do whatever you want. Party down, have fun, exploit, mistreat others and nature, because nothing means anything. If there's no God, then what does anything mean? But if you do that, if you behave in that manner, what happens? You don't feel good. Well, you might feel good at the moment, for a while. But in your heart, you don't feel good. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't sit well with you. Your conscience, your consciousness, your sense of self, your sense of responsibility to others. Something inside of you begins to ache or feel empty, or worse, guilty. Anybody ever had any of those feelings besides me? I'm not alone. Oh, that's good to know. So, in our hearts, we have what? According to Vedanta, who is situated in the heart? First of all, the two things. Jiva, the individual soul, and the, or we'd say Atma, and the Parama Atma, super soul. Super soul is your conscience. That's that voice in there. The more conscious you become, the more aware you become, the more spiritually realized you become, the louder, stronger, and more present the voice of God in the heart becomes. Right? So, we're not just here for nothing. In the Vedanta, it is stated, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything here, Sarvam, Idam, in this world, is Brahma, is spirit. Everything is built on a matrix of spirit. Brahma or Brahman. Can you see it? No, really. Well, if you can't see it, it must not be there, right? If you can't see God, he must not exist. How could he? I don't see him. Come on, show yourself to me. Let's see. Can you see radio waves? Can you see television waves? Can you see microwaves? No. Does that mean they don't exist? No, they exist. Just because you can't see something does not mean it does not exist. There's another sutra. In fact, it's from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. This is a very famous one. Asato ma sadgama Tamasi ma jyotir gama and mritto ma amrita gama, which means do not remain in illusion. Seek eternal truth. Do not remain in darkness. Seek out the light. Do not embrace death. Embrace immortality. Then there's another verse from the Hitopadesh. Ahara nidra bayamaitanam cha samanyam etat pashubir naranam dharmo hitesham adiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubi samana. Which means what? Eating, sleeping, sexual sex life, and defending ourselves, that is, making a living. These four principles are common to both human beings and animals. The distinction between human life and animal life is that a man can, or a woman can, search for God. But an animal cannot. It would never occur to an animal. That's the difference. Therefore, a man without that urge for searching after God is no better than an animal. There's two processes for understanding God, for understanding spirituality. The descending process and the ascending process. Most of us, as we are situated here in life, we try to grasp things or wrap our minds around things. All kinds of things. And philosophers for centuries have used logic and argument to make a case for their various beliefs in God and what's important in life. In the Vedanta Sutra it says Tarka Pratishtanat, which means an argument in hard to compete sometimes. An argument in logic has no substantiation. Why? Logic is a reasonable method of understanding something. Not when it comes to the transcendental. Not when it comes to the divine. Not when it comes to God. You're trying to understand a principle that is unlimited with your limited mind. And you may be genius caliber. Many people are. But still, their minds are limited. Their brains are limited. They don't have the power to understand something that is beyond their perception and beyond their perception, their conception. So, the ascending process is our attempt to understand God from down here. So, it's almost like we could envision a triangle or a pyramid with the big side up, coming down like this to us, to an individual going up. So, we are trying to understand all of that. And when we say the top of that, the pyramid, the wide end, is infinite. It's impossible. It can't be done. So, the process that we recommend, the Vedanta process, the Vedic process, and the process we use in Bhakti Yoga, is the descending process. We take it from the Vedas on down. The Vedas, the books of knowledge and Veda means knowledge, it means science, have been extant for not thousands of years, millions of years. Vedic knowledge and Vedic mantra was spoken at the time of creation. In fact, that's what set creation in motion. And as far as carbon dating, and the archaeologists have been able to catch up, it used to be they would go back 3,000 years and say, yes, we have evidence of the Vedic culture from 3,000 years ago, or pardon me, 3,000 BCE. Now, they've expanded it, based on their discoveries, to 6,000 BCE. Yet Lord Ram was here 2 million years ago. 2 million. And the evidence of his being here is still there. It's there. We've talked about this. The bridge that they built from continental India across the water to Sri Lanka is still there. You can see it on satellite photographs under the water at the bottom of the sea. So that's one of the proofs. So the descending process, taking the Vedas as our authority, we have to accept some sort of authority. So what are we going to accept? Well, nowadays we are programmed, I like to say brainwashed to a great extent. Science has its value, scientists have their value, they make contributions. But they also sometimes get self-involved, self-absorbed, and they give themselves a lot of credit that they don't really deserve to come up with a theory. They speculate on that theory, and then it's printed in books as if that's the way it is. Yet, it's a theory, such as Darwinian evolution, for example. So, taking the Vedas as a platform for authority, then we use the descending process. We can find out exactly who God is, how things work, what the science of yoga is, the linking with the soul to God, and how to go about it. So, who are we? We're souls. What is our purpose in life? To become realized, fully realized. In terms of what? Our divine spiritual nature and our relationship to our maker, our creator. Whoever and whatever it is that placed us here. That is the most important thing above all. Because anything related to the body has to be, at best, temporary. And it will come to an end. There are many atheists that write books. There are famous ones like Richard Dawkins. Who's that other guy that sits in a wheelchair?
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. He's an atheist too, isn't he? Pretty much. I thought so. I was guessing, but... And because these are learned people, they have very good educations, and a lot of people listen to them. Sometimes people get very puffed up about what they know. There's a nice statement here from the Hitopadesh, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. True knowledge bestows humility. Vinayam, humility. But they develop some ego, some of these people. Especially if they're well known and they've written a lot of books. So, have you heard this joke? Thought I'd share this joke with you. Have you heard the joke about the famous atheist who, you know, he's near the end of his life, he's very well established, and he decides to go for a walk in the forest. And there he is walking along a track in the forest, and all of a sudden the bear comes out of nowhere and starts chasing him. And he's running, and he's running, and he trips, and he falls, and there's the bear coming up to him. And he goes, "If there's a God, if there's a God, save me now." And all of a sudden, time stands still. The leaves on the trees stop moving. The clouds stop moving in the heavens. There's no breath of wind on your skin. Everything freezes. The clouds part. A beam of light comes down, and he hears a voice. "Yes? You called me?" "Yes. God, Lord, whoever you are, can you save me?"
Says God.
"Well, let me see. You've spent your entire life denouncing me, saying I didn't exist. And anybody who believed in me was an absolute fool. That religion is the opiate for the masses. And you've called me pretty much everything under the sun, even though I don't exist. And now, at this critical juncture of your life, you're calling upon me, I might add, for the first time. Although I do appreciate that, on the one hand. You know, can I help you? Can I save you? Yeah, well, I could. Will I? I don't think so." All of a sudden, time goes back into motion. The leaves are swaying. The clouds are moving. The breeze is flowing, and the bear jumps on him and attacks him and kills him. That's the joke. So is there a moral there someplace? Yeah, of course. There are many atheists that are atheists and committed atheists until they faced with death. Some of them, I'm sure, remain so, and some of them get converted at the 11th hour. Okay. Who? Now, let's look at what. Chaturvarnyam mayashrishtam guna karma vibhagashah. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that there are four divisions, natural divisions of society. Chatur Varnam. Maya Srishtam, created by me. That's what Krishna says, created by me. Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Vibhaga means divided into. Guna, natural qualities and traits and characteristics. And karma, work. The kind of work that you do. The kind of thing you're attracted to doing. Yeah. And you can look at, you can test this theory out because it's there. You can find it existing in every civilization since the beginning of time. It's there. And of course, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. That's what it's divided into. So we've talked about this many, many times. Everybody talks about it from time to time. So how do you determine which one of those you belong to? Well, I've tried to simplify it very simply into, what is your goal in life? What is the thing you want to pursue in life? What is the more or less the most important thing? You may want to pursue several things, but more or less, what's the most important thing you want to pursue in life? Is it knowledge? Brahmins pursue knowledge. People who pursue knowledge are brahminical in nature. Knowledge becomes the most important thing. Is it power and position? Is that what you want to pursue? Power and position. Then you would be a Kshatriya. Hopefully, your pursuit of power and position is not just self-motivated. It is to reach a state of power and position whereby you can affect change, you can organize, you can administrate, you can help the populace. Be it a small amount of people, a moderate amount of people, thousands, millions, depending. That's a noble calling. That's what Kshatriyas do. They look after the populace, the masses. And they need that power and position. You see with politicians, they're very caught up in this power and position. Earlier this year, well, I think it was this year still, in Dekeni, they had an election earlier this year, right? And the ruling party, which is Fine Gael, pretty much got decimated in that election. And they lost a lot of seats, and they lost their majority, their governmental majority in the legislature. So the president of Ireland, which you say here, Taoiseach, he spent 2 months, two entire months, trying to cobble together a coalition government so that he could remain in power. 2 months. Then he, you know, went back and forth saying, yeah, I'm going to step down, I'm not going to step down. Then what happened? Then finally he did step down. Now you got a new guy that stepped in for a while. And now they got 2 months off. 2 months break for the summer where they don't pass any laws. I don't know that they passed any laws this year, frankly. So that's 4 months off to the tune of what? How much do they make? $150,000 a year or some such thing? It's a good job, huh? So that's power and position misused. That's the example. You need to work for the people, for the benefit of the people. You're seeing in America right now, where's the governance? What's happening on behalf of the people? That's why these people are in these positions. And all of the press, almost all of the press you read, is about personalities who have become the news. That's not supposed to be what you're reading. You're supposed to be reading about all the different legislative bills that they've passed. That's what power and position is for. So if you want power and position, you would have a Kshatriya nature. Suppose your goal in life is wealth. Then you're a Vaishya. I just want to make money. Lots of it. Then you're a Vaishya. Then you're a business person, or you do trading, you do banking. Of course, farming too is a Vaishya, but farming is less about money, it's more about crop production. But there are many people, more and more nowadays. When I was growing up, people would go to university, and every subject you can imagine, the whole plethora of subjects in university, they would go into that to study, and it was acceptable. If somebody wanted to study history, that was fine. If somebody wanted to study art, that was acceptable. Nowadays, it's very much frowned upon. Everybody's trying to become an MBA. I have so many clients that they're busy just trying to become an MBA, Master of Business. And of course, that and technology, which is, you know, that's a legitimate thing. But so many people, anytime you say, oh, I'm going to study history, what do you do with that? You're not going to be able to make any money with that. As if everything in life is about making money. It isn't. And does everybody have the ability to make money and to do business? No. A segment of the population is suited to that. Not everybody. We're not all suited to writing code either, are we? Years ago, my good friend, he started to teach me how to write code. Because I needed a job at the time, and I'm going, hopefully I don't have to do this for the rest of my life. Now, if you got a mind for it, great, you know. But if you don't, like me, not so good. Suppose you are just a simple person who wants to have a trade. Maybe you're an artisan, maybe you're a craftsperson. Maybe you just want a job. Just want a job. I'll work my 40 hours. I don't want to manage anything. Just get my check, go home. I'll be here Monday morning. Fine. Then that's a shudra. So it's real simple to determine what you are by what your goal is. So let's look at Dharma, which I've talked about many times. Dharma means your fundamental nature. Your Dharma is that which cannot be separated from you. Prabhupada explains it nicely. He says, the Dharma of sugar is sweetness. The Dharma of sunshine, sunshine is light. The Dharma of water is liquidity. You cannot separate these things. It's impossible. Or they'd lose their meaning. So what is it about you? What is it about your nature, your qualities, that cannot be separated from you? That is your very essence. That is how you determine what you should be doing in life. This is not a spiritual consideration, per se. This is a human consideration. If you follow your Dharma, if you act in harmony with your nature, more or less, you'll be happy in life. You'll be fulfilled. You should, when you get up in the morning, want to get out of bed and go to work and do your job. Why? Because I got to make money? Yeah, you got to make money. No, because I like doing my job. I enjoy my job. And the fringe benefit is it pays. And therefore, I can sustain myself and my family. People who have jobs or take jobs that they don't like, are there any of those around? Millions. Are what? They're unhappy. They're miserable. Sometimes they'll stay in a job for 20 years, 30 years. Right? Are they following their Dharma? No. No. If you're in a position like that, if you're in your 20s, completely understandable. If you're still in a position like that when you're in your 40s, I'm not criticizing you. But especially if it's causing you unhappiness, misery, frustration, and if it's not allowing you to express your creativity and your natural talents and abilities, then I suggest we're doing the wrong thing. Hmm? I put this small statement up on Facebook a week ago about Dharma. And then somebody asked me, do the three modes of nature essentially affect our Dharma? Which is a very, very good question. So I give this example. You know the modes of nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So I said, supposing your dharma is to be a teacher. That's your nature. So if you were in sattva, in the mode of goodness, you might be teaching some healing system. Or you might be teaching spirituality. Or you might be teaching school. If you were in the mode of passion, rajas, then you might be teaching business and trade, because business is in rajoguna, right? And if you were in the mode of ignorance, in tamas, then you might be teaching criminals how to break into houses. You might be teaching people how to make a bomb and blow stuff up. In all examples, it's a teacher. Teacher's a teacher. But it depends what mode you're in. If you're teaching spirituality and that's what you do day in and day out, then you should be, at the very least, in the mode of goodness, sattva, but you should be, it is beyond that. Spirituality is transcendental to the three modes of nature. The yoga process, what we do here, bhakti yoga, is transcendental to the modes of nature. But your dharma is your dharma, no matter what mode you're in. That's the point. So we find out from Vedanta, from the Vedas, that there's a Sanatan Dharma. And Sanatan means eternal. There is very simply an eternal Dharma. For who? For everybody. And what is it? Service. Everybody's here to serve. Who? We're all here to serve. All of us. To serve others. To serve our families. To serve society. To serve customers. To serve clients. To serve our friends. To serve a tourist who's lost or looking for something. We're here to serve. That's our eternal dharma. Those of us, some of us cannot serve because of difficult karma. Some of us choose not to serve and live off society, live off the efforts of others, the wages of others. It's a choice. But largely, you'll see throughout the world, in any civilization, people are serving. So that's there here in the material world. And ultimately, what's the highest service? Service to God. That is the essence of bhakti yoga, is to develop a service attitude, a serving attitude toward God. Serving people, serving society, family, etc., is temporary. You might be really good at it, but it comes to an end. It comes to an end with, well, perhaps retirement or death, for sure. Sanatan Dharma, eternal service, never ends. Bhakti Yoga is the only yoga, the only yoga system that I know of where the means and the end are the same. If we practice Ashtanga Yoga, Pranayama and Yama, Niyama, Dhanana, Dhyana, Pratyahara, it's a means to an end. And once you realize that end, you stop doing it. Means to an end means once I'm there, once I've reached the goal. Once, if I'm driving from here to Galway, guess what? When I reach Galway, what do? I park the car, turn off the ignition, and go about my business, don't I? But serving God, if that's what we're doing, if that's what we're learning how to do, if that's what eternal Dharma is about, then when we die, what do? When we transcend, when we become realized souls, and we don't have to come back and take birth again on the wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death, and we go back to the spiritual world where we belong, what do? We keep serving. The means and the end are no different. Well, what's different about it then? The difference is you become a realized soul. We'll get to that. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Vagamang Dharmyam Satsukam Kartum Avyayam. He's talking about the process of bhakti yoga, of yoga in general, and of realizing God. This knowledge is the king of education. The king. Rajavidya. The most secret of all secrets. Rajaguhyam. It is the purest knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. It is the perfection of religion. Religion is dharma. So we can say religion, any religious practice, spiritual practice, or we can say dharma, which is, what is your purpose? It is the perfection of your purpose. Well, what if my goal is wealth? What if my goal is... It doesn't matter. Whatever your purpose is, this is the perfection of that purpose. Because it transcends all of those modes. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. And the other verse... Krishna says, in fact, it's the verse before that. Idam tu te guhya tamam parvakshyam yanasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yajkyatva mokshase shubhat. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, you are never envious of me. Why would he even say that? You are never envious of me. I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of all the miseries of material existence. What's he saying here? God is saying to his devotee, his friend, his brother-in-law, he's saying, you know what? I'm going to tell you about this. This is Rajavidya. This is the king of knowledge. I'm going to reveal it to you now. Well, would he not just reveal it to anybody? No. And what's the qualification? He only mentions one qualification. Because you are never envious of me. Envy is a very, very difficult emotion, my friends. It's a snare. It's a trap. In Catholicism, they say that we are here because of original sin. Is it correct? Yeah. I'm not going to define what they mean by it. I'm going to define it this way. The original sin, no matter what your religious background might be, the reason we're here is because of enviousness toward God. That's why we're here. Because we didn't want to live in the spiritual world and contribute and be part of it all and get along. We thought, we woke up one day and said, you know, it's really nice here in the spiritual world. But I just don't see why God has to be, you know, why is he the main guy? You know, he gets all the attention. I'd like a little more attention myself. Oh, okay. So does God condemn that person? No. As you like. You can't do it here in the spiritual world. By definition, it doesn't work here. But I got a spot for you. Down in the material creation. We'll send you down there. And you can establish yourself as the center of your universe. As the center of your solar system, if you like. That's why we're here. Enviousness of God. Sometimes we become envious of other people. Don't we? Why does that person have that? You know? Why do they own that? I'd like to own that. I don't have the money for that. Or why do they get this opportunity? Or why do they look like that and I look like this? So many different things. We are envious. Well, we're missing one essential point here. You're projecting what you want or what's of value out apart from yourself, out around you, by looking at people and things and saying, that's desirable, I'd like to have that, that's not desirable, I'm glad I'm not like that. We make these value judgments, yes, we understand that. But what you're missing out on, you're missing the point that if all that energy, whatever energy you may put into envy, and if you don't, wonderful, is complete wasted energy. You're wasting it. Because it's, first of all, it's negative energy. What does negative energy do? There's two forces in the universe. Expansion and contraction. No? You don't believe me? Watch your lungs for a couple minutes. That's it. Negative energy does what? Contracts. What? Everything. So if this is your channel, nice and big, and everything's flowing nicely through that channel, and every day a little bit more negative energy, envy, what happens to that channel? It contracts. It shrinks. Who's shrinking it? These people? No. You are. Do you realize you're shrinking it? No. Probably not. Probably you don't. Again, you know, I could say that's your foolishness. You don't realize it. So what should we be doing? We should be using this energy and directing it inward. What do you have to offer? Who are you? What are your qualities? Because you have a uniqueness. You have a subjective experience that none of us have. You have traits and qualities and talents and abilities that none of us have, like you do. Not in that combination. So instead of moaning about or being envious of these other people, you should be focused on the expansion of who you are, your dharma, your essence, and how that can go out, not only, of course, to satisfy you and fulfill your goals and desires in the world. We have desires. But to make a wider contribution. So people will be looking at you and going, wow, doesn't she have some wonderful qualities? Yeah? So, why is Krishna telling Arjuna this knowledge? Because he's not envious. That means if you're envious, people won't share with you. Once they find out, you're envious. Okay. When? It says in the Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. I think that's the first sutra, isn't it? Atato. Now. When? Now. Now is the time for inquiry into the Absolute Truth. What do you mean now? Right this minute? Yeah, whatever now. Whatever now you're in, it's now. Later on? Down the road? What if there is no later on? What if you're 30 years old and you're going to die at 31? Then there is no later on, is there? Most of us do not know when we're going to die. If you have a terminal illness, I'm sorry that you do. And you know you're going to die. They've given you 6 months or 2 years. Wonderful blessing. Wonderful blessing. The terminal illness? Not exactly. Knowing that your time is limited. That's a blessing. So you can use it consciously and in the most productive manner. So now is the time. That's the when. Whatever your situation you are. Some of you were conscious, spiritual by nature from birth. I don't mean you were raised in a culture that's spiritual, like in Indian culture, for example. It's the most spiritual one I know. That's why I've been sitting here for 45 years. How many of you were spiritual from the beginning? How many of you developed... That's a lot. That's a lot of people here. How many of you developed your spirituality over time? That's another lot. How many of you had an awakening or an epiphany, and before that you weren't particularly spiritual, but after that everything changed? 4 or 5. So, when will we tire of the misery and the destruction around us? When will we get tired of that? When is time served enough here in the prison house of the material world? At what stage of your life will you become serious about self-realization? That's your choice. What's more important than that? I know you got a lot of things to do. There's a whole list on your phone of things you're supposed to do. You've got a lot of responsibilities. People are pulling you from various directions. They're making demands, some of them absolutely unreasonable. And I don't know how I can get out of this, but I really like to get out of this situation. It's making me crazy. So what do? Do we fall apart? Do we disintegrate? Do we work till we collapse? Do we go at such a pace that we collapse? Or do we go in? Do we contact our spiritual nature? You know what happens when you contact your spiritual nature? All of this foo-for-all, all of this white noise, all of these distractions, all of the things that are going on around you become diminished and diminished and diminished over time. When you're very good at focusing on your spiritual nature, your relationship to God, none of that matters. Do you have to still deal with it? Yeah, you can still deal with it. It won't have the same effect on you. It won't cause you the stress. It won't cause you to become desperate and to think there's no hope and there's no solution. There is a solution. There's always a solution. Out in the material world, they'll offer you all kinds of solutions. The doctor will give you, diazepam, or what's the other one that's very popular? Valium, yeah, that's another one. There's all kinds of these drugs, you know, with 89 side effects, each one. They'll give you things, but they won't solve it. You have to go to your truth. You have to go to your essence. You have to go to your being. Stop doing and start being. In the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, the great devotee of Nrsingadev. Whenever I picture Nrsingadev, I see Lakshmi on his knee on the left side, and then I see Prabhupada. Prahlad. It's a very common painting. We've all seen it. And then Prahlad standing on the floor next to him. Kumara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatan iha. What does this mean? One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of life from childhood. From childhood. Is that what Prahlad did? Oh yeah, but you don't understand. You don't understand what my living situation is or what my parents were like. I mean, it's horrendous what I've had to go through. Oh yeah? Compared to Prahlad? I don't think so. Were you born in a demon family? First class, most powerful demon in the universe at the time. Were you born to a father like that? I know some of you are going to put your hands up and say, yes, I was. Similar to it. Not me. Father who pushed you off a cliff, and you boiled in oil, and you attacked by serpents, and stomped by elephants? I don't think so. So Prahlad says, from childhood to practice Bhagavad Dharma, the activity of service to God. Bhagavad Dharma. Whatever your Dharma may be, in addition to that Dharma that we do in the material world, we must practice Bhagavad Dharma, the highest Dharma. Your Dharma, whatever you do, must be made as an offering to God. Then it becomes what? Bhagavad Dharma. It becomes Bhakti Yoga, devotional service. The human body is the most rarely achieved. You don't realize how hard it is to get a human body. How many species? 8,400,000. Hey, here we are. We've arrived. Is it easy to get a human body? No. You want to tell me about your lifetime as a tadpole? You want to tell me about your lifetime as a lion? As the bear that ate the atheist that we talked about? You don't remember. But here we are, present. We remember. Here we are. The human body, although temporary, provides great benefit because in human life one can perform devotional service to God. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. That's what Prabhupada put in there. A slight amount. How much is that? I don't know. I sit there sometimes and wonder, you know. Do you do that too? Have I done enough? Is it enough? Will it ever be enough? What's going to happen when I leave the body? Is Krishna going to look me up? Next. I wonder, you know, I don't know what's enough. Who knows? But it says, just even a little bit can go so far, it can actually deliver the state of being that we all seek, which is what? Freedom. Freedom. Freedom from what? From death. Birth, death, over and over and over again. So, do you like that hamster wheel? It's good being a hamster. Reincarnation hamster? I don't like it. Where? Anywhere. Everywhere. Do you have to be in the temple to connect to God? No. It's nice. It helps. It's nice to be going to churches and temples. Well, I've never been to a mosque myself. Been to synagogues. You can feel God in these places. You can feel God in nature. Yeah? Have you ever felt God as you drove down the street? Yeah? I have. Anywhere, everywhere. There's no limit. God's everywhere. You can make that connection anytime. Why? For those of you, we're doing who, what, when, where, why, how. That's what we're doing. We're on why. Life isn't about enjoyment. Most of the people, I shouldn't say most. So many people, especially in the Western world, it's all about enjoying. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy. Bring your food and restaurant. Enjoy. I mean, that's a nice thing to say. It's positive. It's pleasant. What's life all about? I've heard many stories from many people. I know a lot of people. Life's all about barbecue. That's what it's all about. Meat on the grill. Barbecue. I've heard that several times. It's all about that.
Ain't nothing better.
Or life's all about beer. It's all about drinking beer. Having a pint. That's what it's about. Or it's all about sex. I mean, we know that. Sex makes the world go around. It's all about sex. As much as you can, as often as you can. It's all about that. You haven't convinced me yet. No, it's all about fishing. That's my meditation. I love being out there. It's all about fishing. No? No, it's all about golf. It's all about golf. Because when you retire, that's the only thing you really want. I mean, lots of people. I can golf 3-4 times a week now. You're kidding. No, I'm free. Is your husband home? No, he's golfing. That's what it's all about. No, it's all about family. It's all about family. Well, sounds good, but it comes to an end. It's not all about family, either. It's all about spiritual realization. That's what it's all about. Most of these people don't know that. God bless them. They don't know it. It has not yet occurred to them. Maybe there's a heaven where you can golf all the time. I don't know. You know, if you've been good and you get some rewards, you'll go to the golf heaven.
Pretty boring.
Not for a golfer. For you, maybe. It's all a form of madness. Our perceptions of the material world are all a form of madness. Why? Why? Well, we're running around like madmen. Not exactly. But most of us are so far from the truth that it's a form of madness. I mean, you've gotten it wrong, not kinda. You really got it wrong. No, because you can't say that to anybody. It's not polite, and you wouldn't do it. It's a great Bengali proverb. Prabhupada quotes, "Pagle kina bole, chagle kina kaya." Anybody? You never know what a madman might say. Just like you never know what a goat might eat. That's the proverb. You never know what we might come up with here, down here in the asylum of the material world. Not that we're crazy, but we're not thinking clearly. The last one, how? How do we do it? So many religions make reference to God, right? How many do? So many. Well, who is he? They don't know. They don't know. He's a supreme being. Allahu Akbar. He's all powerful. Yeah. Right, yeah. Who is he? Supposing, you have a hero. And you admire your hero. Yeah. But unless you have a relationship directly, you won't know what he's really like. You can listen to his music or what he writes, read his books, or see his photos or see his movies or whatever. But having the relationship is the key thing. That's when you actually know what somebody's like. So we know what God is like. God has many forms, as we've said many times. Here, we worship Krishna, the all-attractive personality of Godhead. Why? Because he's all-attractive. And because this process of yoga, bhakti yoga, is the yoga of love and devotion. It's all about love. What we need to do is to learn how to love. Mother, father, grandparents, siblings, friends, teachers, singers, musicians, actors, sports teams, heroes, our lovers, our partners, our spouses, our children, our country of birth, humanity. God. That's the highest experience. All the rest of them have a sell-by date. They have a shelf life. They'll all come to an end. Believe me. But not your loving, reciprocal bond with God, with Krishna. That's the essence of who Krishna is, and that's the essence of the kind of relationship that Krishna has with his devotees. Is it formal and very reserved? No. It's intimate, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and you can crack jokes, and you can run around, and you can have fun, and you can play music, and you can dance. And you can sing. Why? Because that's what he likes to do. That's the kind of guy he is. Now, if none of that appeals to you, then I suggest you find another form of God to worship than Krishna. Krishna is famous as a thief. That guy, he's a thief. Yes, he is. It's documented. From the time he was a child, he began to steal. He stole butter. Makkan chor. He stole yogurt. He fed it to monkeys. He went to the neighbor's house, he stole butter. Fed his brothers, his friends, monkeys. As a thief. Butter thief. And ultimately, stealer of hearts. That's what he is, ultimately. He will steal your heart. But you gotta go there. You gotta get to know him. You got to spend your time and energy and focus on getting to know him. You got to get him to notice you. Is it a one-way street? He steals your heart and you're left with heartless? No. You can steal his heart too. It's not one way. It's both ways. That's how we do it. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Questions?
Everybody's got it. Perfect. So,
what would you think personally would be the best method for praying to God's heart?
Exactly what we do here. Chan dance, develop your relationship. Include Krishna in everything you do. And just include him. You know, I mean, you go about your day, you do this, that, and the other, right? I just discuss it with Krishna. Okay, Krishna, this is what I'm going to do. Now, if you think I'm not doing the right thing, give me a heads up here. Let me know. Or, I just bought some flowers the other day, and I did a flower arrangement. I'm not known for that. I said, okay, how do you want this now? I'm gonna make you a nice flower arrangement. And I did, you know. My wife came and she went, wow, that was nice. I said, yeah, well, Krishna wanted it like that. So that's how I did it. That's how you do it. You know, this is how we do it with our loved ones and our friends, right? You know, when somebody comes to your house, have a seat. You want something to drink? What can I get for you? Do you tell them what you're going to give them? You ask them, don't you? Or you say, oh, you know what, I just made something. If you go to Kurma's house, you know, I just made something special that you're going to love. I'm like, oh, I know. Would you like some of that? Yeah. Calzone. Calzone. That's how you do it. You just treat him like a person, because that's what he is. You include him. He's the one maybe you don't see yet. You cannot see. He's there. So just start acting like he's there all the time. Guess what? He starts showing up. I had a woman come up to me one time. A very psychic woman, I guess. And she said, well, I knew her. You know, I knew her. It's not like I did. She was a stranger. And she said, you know, you have this guy walking around behind you, don't you? I said, I don't know. Can't see. Yeah, he's blue. He's blue? Oh, okay, that's Krishna then. Oh. Who's Krishna? I said, it's God. Oh. He's kind of good looking, sort of young looking. Yeah? Yeah, that's him. Yeah, he's following you around. I said, good. That's what I want. Now, I don't know if he was there, but she saw him. Come on, Krishna, catch up, will you? Will you? Time's of the essence here. You just do it. It's not hard. He's more interested than you are in this relationship. He's way more interested. He wants you to come home. Why don't you come home? Oh, I'm busy. When will you come home? Oh, maybe next week. Oh. Why are you coming home? We miss you here. That's how he feels. You think I'm exaggerating? I'm not. I'm not. Just like we do. We're like this with our loved ones. Same. This is not out of the norm. It is the norm. Right? Okay. Manuji? Well, to the best of my knowledge, I get this very strong feeling that I'm going to have eternal relationships with some of my God brothers and God sisters. Why?
because we're going in the same direction. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, if I make it to Krishna Loka, I look forward to seeing some of my old friends that I haven't seen for a long time, you know, that, you know, many of them have left the planet, and they are more and more. So they would be there, I would think. There are souls down here in the material world. I know that souls travel together lifetime after lifetime for a period of lifetimes, and they take different, you know, you might be the father, and then you have a son, and then your son may be your brother in the next life, or your wife in the next life. That happens. But those aren't necessarily eternal. Those are for a time. So. Okay. We're going to have some kirtan, and followed by a feast. No? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.